It is recording.
Okay. Good afternoon and welcome to the Jacksonville Ethics Commission. We have a lot to accomplish today, and I know the Complaints Committee has been meeting for an hour, so we'll try to get through this and get done. If you'll join me, let's start with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. And Ms. Miller, do we have an ethics thought today?
We have two.
Excellent.
Yes. Both of them Aristotle. The first one, it is the mark of an educated mind to be able to entertain a thought without accepting it. The second is, it is not enough to win a war. It is more important to organize the peace.
Appreciate it. Let's start with approval of the minutes. First, we have the Ethics Commission meeting minutes for November 6, 2019. Is there a motion to approve those minutes?
Moved.
Okay, we have a motion, a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion about those minutes? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, by your action, you've approved the meeting minutes from November 6, 2019. Next, we have the minutes from the ad hoc committee meeting under 602-402-D from November 18, 2019. Is there any motion to approve those minutes?
I move to approve the ad hoc committee meeting minutes from November 18, 2019.
Thank you. There's a motion and a second.
Second.
There's a motion and a second to approve these minutes. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Are there any opposed? By your action, you've approved the ad hoc committee meeting minutes, tongue twister, for November 18, 2019. Staff reports, anything from ECHO?
Yes, next to ECHO office, it says state law changes. And what that means is about this time every year, we start monitoring what the Florida legislature is doing pertaining to any local ethics legislation, actually all ethics legislations. And in the past, we've had a lot of success in getting involved in that and being able to shape some of the laws at the state level by joining up with other ethics commissions around the state. So Sandy, raise your hand, because everybody knows Sandy, who has grooved right into being a staff member. Sandy is going to be monitoring that with the Duval delegation liaison here in the city, and just to make sure any legislation that has word ethics in it, we're on top of. So we'll be bringing you more information on that. The next thing is we are continuing our citywide training program. We're rolling out very specific training for each of the departments in the city, and that's exciting. We've gotten really good feedback, which I don't think I've sent you, from the Public Works Department. We trained 120 of their top people, and we're going down now and training everybody else in Public Works and using that as a model for training citywide. We're also doing strategic planning for the year, just so that we, you know how, and we all know how this goes. You get involved in a really big project and it just sucks all of your attention, but you have to make sure that all the other aspects of your strategic plan and what your office is supposed to be doing is doing. And so we've been working on that and pretty much ready to roll out our strategic plan for the year. That's our office, not the Ethics Commission. And we'll send that to you when we get it completed.
Thank you. Yeah. Any report from the Office of General Counsel?
No report. Thank you.
Thank you. Discussion on committee structure. You should have all received the 2020 committee assignments. Mm-hmm. If you are on a committee that you don't like or you'd like to go on a different committee, now is the time to let me know. And I tried my best with the matrix I received to give everybody at least their second choice. Any comments or any discussion about the committee? All right. My thought on, and I don't know if this belongs here in 6B or C, but my inclination, as far as your comments, is to not meet as a commission in February, to try to ask the committees to meet and see what priorities you want to achieve in your committees. And for some of them, that might be nothing. So internal ops may say, we like the internal operating rules and there's nothing else to do. Legislative and open government probably have a lot more to do than that. And complaints, I don't know whether you have a need to meet in public or not. You probably should.
We have a meeting on the 3rd, but it's not in public.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So that may be our February meeting.
Yeah. Occasionally that committee meets in public to talk about complaints, rule changes, and issues that are sort of at a higher level. So I think the committee chairs, but what does everybody think of that? Is that a good idea? Okay. All right. So we won't meet as a commission, as a full commission in February. I really would like the 4 standing committees to meet, even if it's just to get together, brainstorm about your plan, and say that there's nothing to do. But legislative and open government, you guys have stuff to do. Anything else about committees? Echo, did you have anything else about committees? Okay.
No.
So moving on to old business, JDA update. I assume that's Ms. Miller.
It is. Since we last met, a lot has happened. At our November 6th meeting, we discussed the interim report that I had issued about some of the conflicts of interest of the negotiators. I've been trying to keep you all posted as you go along so I don't have a one-hour recap at our meeting. And so you've been getting all of the information as we've gone along. But the main things would be right after our meeting on November 6th, there was a lot of activity between our office and Kirby was very helpful with this analysis, but the conflict analysis of the negotiators. And clearly taking a look at some of the information on the negotiators, we had some issues that had to be brought up with the State Ethics Commission. OGC drafted a request for an informal opinion up to the State Ethics Commission. And before that was finalized and came down as an opinion, they withdrew the names of the 3 negotiators and appointed 3 new negotiators. So that was the beginning of November, and during that time period, no negotiating meetings were being held. So then we got into the end of November, and you've gotten the information on that. Like right before Thanksgiving, the negotiators started meeting. They had 3 or 4 meetings, and then we got to the point where they finalized who was going to be in the negotiation proceedings in Atlanta. Then there was like the sub-issue of there was a lot of there was discussion about my ability to sit in the meetings and to be able to take notes. And I thought of all of you, and I thought, what would you want me to do? And so I hung in there for all of the meetings with OGC on, well, can you just remember everything that was said? And I said, no, I'm getting older. I really need to take notes. I really can't remember everything. And the council president, Scott Wilson, was extremely supportive. He was going to file legislation, emergency legislation, to make sure that I was able to take notes up in Atlanta. And at 5 o'clock, before my flight took off to get up to Atlanta, I got confirmation from JEA that I would be allowed to sit in the meetings and take notes. But that was a fight. And the reason I bring that up is we have some legislation that I'd like to discuss that maybe would prevent that from happening again for anyone that sits in this office, because we can't show up at meetings like that and then have people dispute whether or not we can be there and whether or not we can take notes. It should not ever happen again. After that, I went to the meetings in Atlanta for a week, and in the middle of that, we had sunshine issues come up. And we have that, I think, separate issue to discuss. Then in the middle of all of that, the City Council was investigating the performance plans that were part of the JEA senior leadership team getting millions in benefits if the sale went through, which I would consider somewhat of an incentive to make the sale happen. But all of that started coming out at the same time. And so during this time period, I was also working with Jason Gabriel and Scott Wilson to pick the council, the new attorney that would be advising City Council. And After taking a look at many resumes, Smith Halsey was chosen, and City Council confirmed that appointment. So it's been a very busy time, and the day before Christmas, December 24th, the ITN was pulled completely and ended. You know, so you would think, okay, that's the end of, but now there's additional things that are occurring. The City Council has an investigative committee, and they're going to pull apart all of the different aspects of how could we spend tens of millions of dollars and get to the point where everything is pulled and we have the situation we've got now is not optimum. So they're going to be pulling that apart. And there is a sub-issue of the senior leadership team contracts, and I think I sent you the information on that. There were contracts that were given to all the senior leadership team members, about 13 people initially, although one additional person retired today, so we're down to 9 left of the senior leadership team. But you know, they were all on salary and working for JEA, some of them for 30 years, 20 years, 10 years. They hadn't had any contracts, so there were no contracts. And then at that July 23rd meeting, they all got contracts. And the contracts had all kinds of benefits. The benefits, if you take a look at the contracts, are incredible, really, with the amount of compensation, monthly business allowances to pursue the interests of JEA. We had parking allowance. We had termination pay, consulting after they left. You can only get 20 weeks of severance pay under state law. But, you know, then there was actually consulting agreements that were added onto it on top of the 20 weeks, not to mention annual leave, life insurance. It goes on and on with these contracts. So with the board chair, and I sent you a copy of the letter, I requested that, you know, the people consider the ethics of that particular contract and consider whether or not they wanted to voluntarily pull back from those contracts. That's now pending because OGC is talking with all the people about their contracts. So, well, I intend to meet on Friday with OGC, with the attorney who's working on that, to see if we've made any progress on those contracts. So there's, even though the ITN was pulled December 24th, there's other issues that are emanating from the situation, and I'll stay on top of it. And at our next meeting, who knows what I'll have to report by the time we get together in March. But it is an incredible situation. I've not seen anything like this in the time that I've been in the ethics office. So I, you know, will continue reporting to you as it develops.
Any questions for Ms. Miller?
No, but I'd like to thank you for doing the job that you have charged of doing.
Thank you.
I just want to add to that the city ethics program, which is much broader than just our commission or the ECHO office, worked the way it was supposed to in this process. The inspector general played a role. The ethics, the ECHO office played a role. The commission has a role in that. The state attorney plays a role. The federal law enforcement plays a role. And it worked the way it was supposed to here. Issues came up, and Carla raised those with the Office of General Counsel, with JEA's lawyers inside and outside, and everybody else. And ultimately, the administration recommended, and then JEA decided to follow that advice. And so there's still a lot, I think, for the city to do, but it's a success for the city ethics program. I think that it worked the way it was supposed to, that although every step of that faced resistance, that Carla was, after resistance, allowed in the meetings, and then after resistance, allowed to take notes, and then after resistance, they applied to the State Ethics Commission, and after resistance, you had these sunshine issues come up, and eventually, though, they followed her advice. And so this is how it's supposed to work. The one comment I wanted to make on the senior leadership contracts, I think it might be helpful to provide a little more analysis of why the senior leaders should walk away from their contracts. I know that OGC will have legal reasons they'll discuss and issues under the charter and the code, but I think there are ethics code provisions that call into question whether you should take actions that might reasonably persuade you to view a bid way or another. And whether or not it's a technical violation of the code, that analysis might help some of the JEA, the JEA senior leadership team, mm-hmm. who are thinking, why would I do this? Mm-hmm. Why would I walk away from this contract? Understand that there may be legal reasons that ODC will evaluate with them. There are also real ethical reasons why they should.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would encourage, although not at all a direction, but encourage you to conduct that analysis and to help guide the senior leadership team to understand why, the business reasons, we would say, right? That
mm-hmm.
why, from an ethics standpoint, you should walk away from these contracts.
Good point.
Which are a horrible deal for the taxpayers.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
As a predicate to that, does Miller have access to all those contracts yet?
Oh, I do. I've had them for a few months.
Okay. So it's not a question of people telling you you don't get to look at them?
No, we've already crossed that bridge.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then I would join Mr. Rubin's suggestion. I think it's a good idea for us to weigh in the correct way to point out that there, because the system is working so well, everyone has a part in communicating these things. And I think there probably are things in those contracts that would raise our ethics eyebrows.
That's good, and I'll confer with some of you individually, and I'll follow up with OGC on that to make sure that not just the pure legality of the contracts is discussed, but also the ethics and all the different ethics provisions that can come into play. We'll get that discussed.
Anything else about that update? All right. We'll get the comment. 401 and 411.
Oh, yes. Is that to go over what happened?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, well, this is good. This is good news. When I was in Atlanta, it was cold and dark and rainy, and I was alone in my hotel room. And and the city council was meeting to discuss the bill that you all recommended. It was 805, 2019-805. And initially, the information I got is it would be difficult to pass these changes. And so we had some discussions about that. Joe and I had some discussions about it. Was 401 going to be disputed more than 411? But anyhow, you made the recommendation. The city council president filed the legislation based upon that. So we were waiting to see what would happen on December 10th. And so imagine, I'm up with my computer, it's streaming, I'm watching the city council, and it was so amazing because Kirby, you spoke on behalf of the bill.
I did.
Yep. And did an excellent job. And then it was amazing, like one person after another, city council person said, I stand up and I want to sponsor that. No, I want to sponsor it. And then it turned out that we had unanimous sponsors from city council on this bill. It went through unanimously with no changes. So that's a very big win for the Ethics Commission because we now...
There was a change.
Well, it's minor. Well,
no.
Okay, we'll discuss a change. Go ahead.
Okay, so there was a change from the original legislation that was proposed by the commission, and it is in section 602.411 that had to do with the waiver provision that did say it was... The original version said it was to be granted by the head of the unit of government. The legislation filed had stricken that language and said it was going to be, the waiver was going to be considered by council. And so that had some concerns about the process through council and the delay in the 6 weeks and that kind of thing. So Councilmember Diamond filed an amendment in rules that now has been incorporated into the final bill and approved by council. And there will be a committee comprised of the head of the unit of government concerned with the matter, the executive director of the ethics office or their designee, and the city council president or their designee. So that is different from what you all approved, but it still gets to the same place that you all were trying to get, which is to have an open, transparent process with some type of public view, and when there was a waiver of this code provision and how that waiver would be addressed and considered and when it would be granted and not and in what circumstances. So it still accomplishes all of those things, even though it's a different mechanism.
Okay, and just to be clear, that amendment went through rules the week before. The night of the event, when I was cold and wet and rainy in Atlanta, you know, that all went through very smoothly. Rules, that was like quibbling over who gets to actually oversee it, and good compromise. We were happy with that. But the night that I was watching it in Atlanta, it went through very smoothly. And I've never seen really an ethics bill where everybody jumped on it like that, wanting to be a sponsor before it got passed. I mean, that was like a first. So congratulations to the commission. It was a good bill, and we need to follow up on that with more.
Thank you.
I was very happy about 8 of 5, and this, just as a reminder, was in response to the first ever granting of one of these waivers for Sam Musso when he left as chief administrative officer. And my concern personally was just to make this process happen in public, so that it wouldn't happen, and then the ethics office to receive a copy of the waiver that had been granted a month earlier. And we've achieved that goal with all 19 members signing on as co-sponsors, so that was really great.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else on that? All right, we're moving to new business, and just as a reminder to members of the public that are here, the way that we handle public comment in this commission is that I will allow short public comment before each action, before each vote. And that is limited to the topic that we are about to vote on. And so that will be 6 D, F, and G. The 6 D, F, and G, I will allow short public participation before we vote. That public participation is limited to that topic. Then after we're done with new business, I will open it to general public comment, which can be about any topic, anything that's before us, not before us, or anything else. So first item is Form 1.
You all need to file your Form 1.
Thank you.
And thank you to our chair for leading the charge and already filing his form. Your Form 1 is due by July 1st of this year.
And we should have done that. It's an ethics form. The Ethics Commission has to be on top of that.
And as a reminder, you file with the Supervisor of Elections for the county in which you reside.
Yeah. If you're eligible for any public records exception, the Ethics Commission has a form for that. All right. Strategic goals, strategic planning, 6B.
So in your binder, past the Form 1, you will see the latest iteration of the Ethics Commission strategic goals, and no, that's not a typo. It really was last developed in 2017/18. So we gave it to you all to kind of peruse and for the committees to consider for when they're meeting and what their goals might want to be versus this is kind of a historical overview of where the commission has been and what they were considering the last time they adopted a strategic plan.
Okay. I don't think we need to discuss this as a large group unless anybody disagrees. Okay. Committees, please talk about your individual strategic plans and set goals that make sense. 6C is legislative priorities. It's just the same thing we talked about last time. We have the list of legislative priorities from the November meeting. Mm-hmm. The Legislative Committee and the Open Government Committee should figure out on their own which of them wants to handle what. And some of those you may just decide there's nothing we need to do.
Can I add one?
Yes.
Well, the City Council is having meetings now. Michael Boylan is chairing this group to talk about It was to talk about the future of JEA and all the different alternatives for JEA, but now it's the focus of that committee is shifting. And one of the things they want to talk about would be any changes that are needed in the charter related to independent authorities, how boards are composed, you know, some of the issues that came up with JEA. What do we need in the charter to prevent that from happening in the future? So they're going to be digging into that and asked for any suggestions I had, and I thought about it. And there's one that I'm going to be talking with the legislative subcommittee about, but I just wanted to let everybody know. I would like to have a charter amendment in the ethics and inspector general section of the charter that guarantees funding for our offices, some baseline funding, because what happens right now is every 2 years the inspector general and I have to go to each of the independent authorities and ask for funding. And you know, sometimes you can be asking for funding at the same time you're taking a look at something in that entity, and it's uncomfortable. Most of the large ethics offices and inspector general offices nationwide don't have to do that, because if you're truly independent, you're independent from a funding standpoint. So I'd like to develop that idea and bring it up in front of that committee. As long as they're discussing charter changes, perhaps we can get that addressed.
Sounds good. All right, moving on to 6D. This will be our first action item besides minutes. This is an amendment to the contract between the Ethics Commission and the Director of ECHO, which is Carl Miller, of course. And it's a simple change that her current contract says that she's limited to working 25 hours a week, where the general code says that it should be 50 hours per pay period, which is 2 weeks. And so it essentially just allows flex time over 2 weeks. Now, she actually works a lot more than that, so this provision doesn't change very much. It's a pretty simple change. It's just conforming the contract with Section 116. Is there anything else you guys want to add to that?
No.
Okay. So what I need there is a motion that authorizes and directs me to execute this agreement, which has already been approved by the council and by the mayor.
I'll make that
motion.
I'll second.
Okay, motion by Ms. Love and a second by Mr. DeVote. Is there any discussion? None, so now I will open it to public comment. It's limited to this action item. Is there any public comment about this? Seeing none, I will close that public comment and call the vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Is there any opposed? All right, by your action, you've authorized and directed me to execute that first amendment. The performance review, 6E. So one of my job this year, but the chair's job is to review the performance of the ethics director. I've done that. If you've had a chance to review it, I gave Ms. Miller superb marks. I think she does an outstanding job for the city, and was just a critical part of what's gone on in the past year, but really in the past like 3 or 4 decades. But it was a fitting time to have to do her performance review. Just to let you guys know, my only suggestions were to continuously work on succession planning. I hope she's with us for at least 2 more decades, but in the event that doesn't happen, we need eventually to make sure that we have somebody else who can handle that, to help develop her team and to make sure the office has appropriate budget goals. I know I've said this, most of you have heard me say this at least 6 times, but I firmly believe that the office does not have the budget that it needs right now. And so I have encouraged her to continue to work on that. I believe that we just have to have 2 full-time ethics officers that can work for the city. In the JEA process, I have seen how much, and Kirby can attest, the conflicts questions and the gift questions don't stop just because the city is, you know, involved in turmoil over mm-hmm. something major. And so you still have run-of-the-mill gift questions and random things that come up that involve. And the simplest questions can involve all kinds of research, as she'll tell you. So those are my only things. Any other comments for Carla Miller or anything about this performance review? Carla?
Just in response, I forgot to announce in my report that the chair of finance, council member Aaron Bowman, has asked me to appear in front of the finance committee to talk about the ethics office's budget. And that'll be February 4th, the first finance committee meeting in February. So
excellent.
We'll be discussing needs of the office. I actually, you know, we do need more help. We have so many conflict questions coming in, which is good. That means people are asking questions. They want us to delve into things. Kirby is really the best person in this building, maybe in the state, and picking apart these conflict questions. So that's why she is working on so many of them right now. That's a full-time job in and of itself. And we have a training person, Andrea, who's part-time. And I'm thinking training like thousands of people across the city. It's too much really for a part-time person and for Kirby and I. So we hopefully will get the support of the mayor's office. Hopefully I can report that to you at our next meeting, that they'll be supportive of us getting some additional help.
The administration did just work with the Inspector General to add 3 new positions to the Inspector General's office, which I thought was just outstanding. We met in the Inspector General Selection and Retention Committee this morning, and I relayed that to Mayor's representative that how happy I was to see that happen, because that one of my 2 criticisms of Lisa Green last time we did her review is I thought her office was underfunded, and that was causing the backlog that the Inspector General's office had. They had complaints dating back to 2014 or 2015. So I thought, I told her that I thought she should try to push for that, and she brought it up, and the administration was all in, so they're now hiring 3 new people in the Inspector General's office. I hope something similar will happen with the ethics office, because like Ms. Miller said, I think we really need 2 full-time ethics officers and probably a full-time training person to accomplish their mission. And I don't know that our next ethics director, whoever that is going to be willing to just work as long as it takes, regardless of how much pay is available, the way that Carla does. All right, anything else on that?
No, thank you.
Moving on to 6F. So this is about potential changes to 602-621. I hope that you all have this sheet that has some red line on it. I did leave copies at the table, so hopefully anybody who wanted it was able to see it. And I have 2 more copies for Kirby and Cherry, who are looking around wondering where they're. I thought I looked one for you.
Did you enjoy that, Barry?
You can turn on.
Thank you.
So these are 2 separate issues. The first one is about what Ms. Miller said, and this was a question that was raised initially by JDA's outside counsel, who I think it began by just demanding that she turn her notes over to Foley and Lardner, and then turned into a question of whether she could take notes. And all of that sort of came down to this highlighted language that says she should receive all this information about these certain topics, right, that is not otherwise deemed confidential by law. Now, mm-hmm. I have no idea how that leads to you can't take notes, but that was the issue. And so my suggestion here is that we just strike that section and replace it with what you see after it. That language comes from the Inspector General's statute. So that is copied and pasted from the ordinance that I think Carla Miller is involved in writing that gave the Inspector General the access that she has. Let me just explain one thing, because it may not, I've been asked this, I've suggested this to just people in the community wondering what the response would be. And the only question I've gotten about it is, why does the Ethics Director and the Inspector General need the same access? And the answer is that they have very different functions. Carla's job, or the Ethics Director's job, right, is to see issues as they happen and help guide the city to take the right steps right now. And so she spotted the sunshine issue and raised it and said, we've got a sunshine violation. We need to fix that. We either need to cure it by going to a public meeting and repeating this process, or we have to stop it. And so that's her function. The Inspector General's office doesn't work that way. They're investigatory. They're on the back end. They're going to conduct dozens and dozens of really, really thorough interviews and release a 200-page report a year and a half from now. And both of those functions are critically important to the city ethics program, but they're just very different. And so in my view, it is not redundant to have the ethics office and the Inspector General's office have the same access to information. Mm-hmm. So that is my thought. Ms. Paul.
So which particular ordinance provision of the IG language did you borrow it from?
It is from the duty section, and it's probably in here, actually.
What section?
She needs to do a complaints report.
What part is the Inspector General's part 2?
Yes. Okay.
It is under 602.
It's only 602. I think it's part 3. Yeah, part 3.
Okay.
Duties and functions, which is 602-303-D.
I'm sorry, could you read those again? I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I copied and pasted that from 602-303-D.
And just to give everybody a little bit of history on that, We had an inspector general's office from 2008, and they finally wanted to get it. It was an executive order of the mayor, and in 2010, it's like, let's make it into a code provision. And so this language was from the original inspector general language. Then we added ethics to it. And I don't know where the language came from or why that yellow highlighted section is in there, not otherwise deemed confidential by law. So it was sort of a convoluted drafting, to say the least. But when we drafted the inspector general legislation, it was really tight. We looked into national standards for inspector generals. We got really very tight language that allowed access. So when we had the meeting with OGC on why was I there and why did I have to take notes, we went to my duties and I said, well, it's because it says here that I am supposed to review and report on city issues and proposed programs and contracts for any conflicts of interest, corruption. I said, that's why I'm here. That's, you know, to report on that. And then the next line, it was like, well, we get the IG's language is good, but your language isn't good, so you can't take the notes. In other words, so they were comparing the new, better language. So what this draft does here, and I appreciate Joe lifting the language that gave the inspector general the authority to be in there without question, and saying, well, let's just put that in for the ethics issues. We should have equal access to the inspector general for the ethics, conflict of interest, and corruption issues.
We employ an ethics office, and there's just no reason to have them excluded from the things the city are doing. It prevents her from being able to do the duties that she's charged with. Any comments, discussion, thoughts? Now, my suggestion would be for a motion to recommend this change to city council and that grants be some authority to draft a resolution to work with OGC on the legislation.
So moved.
All right, motion by Ms. Love.
Second.
Second by Ms. Boykin. And is there any public comment limited to this change 602-621? Okay, none. Is there any discussion among the commission or staff? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? All right, by your action, you have recommended to City Council that they make this change, authorize me to draft the resolution, and work with OGC on the legislation. That takes us to the 1205 suggested change, which is item 6G, and that's on the same paper right under that. This came, this is actually something that came up a while ago, although the change might make you wonder whether this is about current events. It is not. This came about when two council members were respondents to complaints that are since resolved, which is why I'm talking about in the public meeting. And one of those council members refused to cooperate initially with our commission, which created all kinds of problems. We thought we knew what was going on. We had a videotape of the incident, and it was just really difficult because we couldn't just talk to the council member who wouldn't talk to us and just explain why she did what she did. The other council member who was involved in the same incident came in, explained everything, and the commission made a decision and, you know, was able to move forward. So at that time, the complaints committee referred back to the full commission to discuss in a public meeting whether to make this change. The issue under 1205 is it says, as you take out the red line, it says all appointed employees, as a condition of employment, shall agree to cooperate truthfully, honestly, and completely. Well, the council member said, I'm not an appointed employee, I'm an elected official, which is a fair point. So council members are not subject to 1205. So the suggested change here is to expand 1205 to include officers, employees, and independent contractors of the city and independent authorities. And the retention and receive city funds thing is just to clarify that non-employees, of course, cannot do something as a condition of employment if they're not employed. The section B there is only to clarify. So if I were drafting the introduction to the legislation, you know, it would say expanding the scope of 1205's restriction to include officers and independent contractors. and then clarifying the Ethics Commission has jurisdiction over offenses. Because if you read 1205A alone, you would wonder whether they can just be fired for violating, right, the condition of employment, retention, or receipt of city funds. There are other sections in the code that say that we have jurisdiction to enforce violations of the Ethics Code, which is Chapter 602. I think it's pretty clear, but most of the other provisions that we have jurisdiction over have this language that's in B. So that's my suggestion. Yeah?
A couple of questions quickly. First one, I suppose, a clarification. Are city council members officers?
Yes.
Okay. The other question I have is, do we need to change the title?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
To conform with the red line changes we're suggesting?
Yes. Yeah, so the title should say cooperation by officers, employees, and independent contractors in official investigations.
Okay.
Or it could just say cooperation in official mm-hmm. investigations.
Like
whichever you prefer.
Version.
You like
yeah.
shorter?
Okay. Personally, I do, but I'm happy to yield.
I like it. Shorter. Shorter is better. Any other thoughts? Yeah?
You're adding independent contractors. Have the commission... has it experienced similar pushback like the one that you described with the city council member? Have we experienced, or the commission experienced, that type of pushback with independent contractors?
In my 4 years here, and I know you've been advising commission even longer than that, I have never seen this issue come up with independent contractors. My thought was just to get ahead of that. But have you ever? I mean, I know you've been working here for longer than I have.
No. I've been assigned since 2013, so
yeah.
I haven't seen any with independent contractors.
I mean,
okay.
If I may, I'm just trying to think about the issues that may arise in the future, and perhaps maybe the commission's already dealt with this, but I know it says state attorney's office and U.S. attorney's office. What if somebody is a suspect in a criminal case and they have a Fifth Amendment right to remain silent? How would that affect this?
It's a fabulous question. We raised that in a past now dismissed complaint with OGC, and luckily we didn't end up needing the answer to that question because it's complicated.
Mm-hmm.
I
would imagine that it is, because mm-hmm. any system yeah. they make could be used against them.
But if you think of, and I know this is totally unrelated, but for example, in Florida bar disciplinary proceedings or in JQC proceedings, you can take an adverse inference mm-hmm. from invoking your Fifth Amendment rights. I think Pollock, if my very vague memory on this serves, it turns on whether the proceeding is punitive or something like that.
Yeah, I think it would have to be criminal in nature. And
there was some
yeah.
like exception
mm-hmm.
to that where something
yeah.
could be quasi-criminal,
mm-hmm.
but
yeah,
it's an interesting issue that I'm sure somebody would raise if we
absolutely.
Were prosecuting.
Yeah, I see that coming.
And that has been dealt with.
Way the way.
That has been dealt with on several occasions where we get a situation in, and then the employee is asked to give a statement, but there could also be some criminal implications, and we work that out with HR and OGC. The IG's office has a procedure for that, Garrity exceptions to, yeah.
And I've run into that when I've represented
mm-hmm.
police officers in the past, and I
right.
know that is, I didn't know if there was something similar in this setting. Or
there is.
Okay.
There is, and it has been considered in the past and worked out. So we,
yeah.
yeah. In fact, what would be a good idea, if we can put this in the minutes so I remember to do it, that we get the IG's procedure on the interaction between those two and then adapt it for the ethics office so we have something in writing on that for when it does happen.
Mm-hmm. And presumably the commission could decide whether or not they can adverse inference.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else?
Just one point. Council Member Rory Diamond has some legislation he just introduced, and the legislation essentially says, like the City Council auditor had requested documents from JEA and did not get them for months. So the
or
bill
at all,
at all.
There's some that haven't been produced.
I know, and so the bill is Rory Diamond's bill is that. All city agencies shall cooperate with requests of the City Council auditor within 48 hours. It's like you get the documents. And I said, excuse me, what about ethics and IG, you know, and he agreed to incorporate that into legislation. So that adds to the cooperation here. Not only do you have to cooperate as an independent contractor and an official, but there's a time period that will be built into it with his legislation.
Was Mr. Diamond's legislation co-sponsored by Dr. Salem?
I don't think that legislation was.
He mentioned it today.
Did he? Did he say he was a sponsor? Maybe he's come on as a sponsor of it. You know, but it was Councilmember Diamond's legislation. I think some people, just like they all adopted the ethics bill, I think that they'll be adopting that one. Yeah.
Anything else? All right, I would suggest a similar motion as the last one.
Move with the edited change concerning the title.
Okay.
To just say cooperation by, or cooperation in official investigation.
Okay, so with that change, your motion is to recommend this change and give me authority to draft a resolution for the OGC and the legislation. All right, motion by Ms. Love. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Ms. Smith. Is there any public comment limited to this change to 602.1205? Hearing none. Is there any further discussion among the commission or staff? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? By your action, you have recommended the council adopt this change to 602.1205 and given me authority to work on a resolution and to work with OGC and the legislature. Moving on to JEA Sunshine issue, to the extent we haven't covered.
I can share.
Does she have one? So you guys want to share one?
Does everyone have your own?
I have my own.
Sunshine.
I thought you were going to ask. I was like, oh man, you really are.
We actually have two issues with this. The first issue is when the ITN gets pulled, from the JEA ITN gets pulled, then all those documents become public records. So, but they're all not. We have some of the bidders objecting to the release of these documents based upon trade secrets and confidential information. So, I mean, I sat there, I looked at the information, I read the documents. I think I know a trade secret when I see one. The amount, like what I prepared last week was a spreadsheet, and I'm not good at Excel, and it took me a while to do this spreadsheet, but a spreadsheet of all the bids for JEA with the gross and the net amount of all the bids. And I sent it to OGC saying I want to release this. And so right now it's in dispute as to whether or not there's trade secrets and confidential information. And I said, clearly, the amount of the bid can't be a trade secret. I'm not getting it. And confidential, like, could we have maybe have someone have the winning bid and then refuse to tell the city what the price is, keeping it confidential for some reason? I don't see it. I defer to OGC for any arguments that the bidders might be making, but several of them say, no problem, we'll release it. So what I would like to do is to release the chart and black out the ones that think it's a trade secret or confidential, and then release the chart with all the ones that think it's okay to release that as a public record. We also don't have a release of the actual revised bids, which are significant. Like when you talk about the value of JEA, and someone has $6.42 billion and someone has $5 billion, well, what's the difference? What's the thinking? Because one of the reasons for JEA to put out the ITN was to ascertain the value of JEA. Like, this is something where we'll get to, you know, understand the value. Well, you can't do that unless you see the revised bids to see how it was put together. So some of that information is being released. Some of it is being held on to. So that's a public records issue that I'm kind of like every day I'm chipping away and following up with, because I've seen the documents. I know what records there are. I know they need to be released. So I'm trying to, that's the public records issue. Now, the public meeting issue that I just wanted to brief everybody on. Okay, so we had the meetings up in Atlanta. There was discussion ahead of time, if you recall, in the press, of why are we having them in Atlanta? Why don't we have them in Jacksonville? Why don't we make the bidders come to us? No, we have to have them in Atlanta. It was cold up there, so I went up there and spent the week. And I'm in the meetings, and what occurred to me after like a day and a half of the meetings is that I thought that a portion of those meetings were public meetings. They should have been like this, noticed and the public allowed to come. They weren't confidential. Not all of the meetings under Florida law are exempt from being a public meeting. And I show you the law on this that was pointed out to me. That's the operative law, and it talks about in 286.0113, if you take a look at B1 where I've underlined it, basically, if you're negotiating and you're in an ITN process or something that you're trying to get your best offer, if you're discussing it and the other bidders can sit in on that meeting, it's not really workable, you know, if you're trying to negotiate. So Florida law allows for, it says in B1, a portion of a meeting at which the negotiation is being conducted or at which a vendor makes an oral presentation or at which a vendor answers questions. So, you know, there's very specific things where you can shut the door and keep the public out because it prejudices the kind of offers you get. So when I was up in Atlanta, the meetings that were going on were management presentations. And it was a PowerPoint, like, here's who we are, JEA. We have this many employees. We have this many unions. We've gotten lots of awards. We have a good IT system. You know, and it was like a presentation of the management of just all the details of the different departments of JEA. So that same presentation was given to all six of the finalists, the exact same one. And the vendors were not, or the respondents, the bidders, were not allowed to ask any questions. It was just a one-way, here's who we are for 2 hours that I listened to six times. and so I felt like the one-directional with no input at all from the respondents. They were told, like, look, just sit here. You know, this is going to take about 2 hours, and then we'll have a break. Hang in there. One direction like that didn't fit a portion of a meeting at which the negotiation is being conducted or which a vendor makes an oral presentation. It just didn't seem to fit the statute. So I notified General Counsel's office while I was up in Atlanta that I thought that, and so there's now memoranda. We're going back and forth on the legal issues. And so I'm pursuing that particular thing because it's not clarified in Florida law as far as we can tell. There is one case. If anybody's interested, I'll get you the actual case, the Carlson case, where they specifically talk about how if you have these meetings, you can take portions of them. Portions are public, portions where numbers are being discussed, not public. And you can go back and forth like this. I think that general presentation for 2 hours was something that should have been publicly noticed and was subject to Sunshine Law. So there are some arguments against that. So I'll keep pursuing that, but it's an interesting issue. So I just wanted to report on that, and we'll see how that goes in the next 2 months.
Just to clarify, yeah. Ms. Miller, that is JEA giving the presentation six times to the defendant.
Right. Then we would have a 20-minute break.
Well, it makes you wonder, and I'm just wondering out loud, you know, is there an intent that there would not be a public meeting when there really should have been a public meeting?
I don't know what the intent was. All I know is that I thought that that part did not fit the statutory exemption for public meetings. And, you know, they could have structured it in a way where you had give and take with the respondents and discussions and like, well, you said this in your bid and maybe here's our answer from our tech person. Or I mean, there could have been a back and forth that would have made it more of like a negotiation or could have been confidential, but I didn't see that the same presentation that was basically a PowerPoint presentation that was read that was released about 2 weeks prior to the meeting. By the way, it was leaked from JEA, and so the presentation was out. The Project Scampi presentation. Anyhow, so that's an issue that I think of all issues, you know, that was the one with Sunshine Public Records and getting the records out that are near and dear to my heart, and I'll keep every day pursuing those particular issues.
Hey, help me understand this public records issue. So the, it's confidential information is exempt, right?
Yeah.
But that doesn't become non-exempt once it proceeds to council, right? So the idea that would have been, they wouldn't have released that even when it goes to the public for a vote?
Yes, that's correct. You know, so if you say, listen, this is my trade secret, how I bake cookies, you know, what my recipe is, and even though you're going to buy my cookies in the end, I'm not going to tell you how we make them. That's really secret. Or from an electrical standpoint, like there was a lot of discussion about desalination of water. I mean, the details of this. and so maybe you have like a really secret way you desalinate water that nobody else knows. I get it. You know, you keep that confidential. But the fact that the general fact that that's going to affect your bid and how you work that into the overall price is something that's public.
But what I'm struggling with is if that information is a trade secret, the amount of the bid,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that would seem to suggest that those bidders would have asked for, let's say that the board, that they went through the JEA procurement process, JEA board approved it, council approved it, so now it has to go to the voters, right?
Mm-hmm.
They would have asked the voters to approve it without knowing the amount of the bid?
Yes, which doesn't make sense to me. Clearly. but I've made the argument a few times, and I'm just saying, listen, I'll keep making it. I apparently can, I'll be persistent on this, but it does not make sense to me. And how you actually design the bid, you know, you can't claim confidentiality on everything and have that be valid. I just don't see it. You know, but I know OGC wants to make sure in an abundance of caution. I think I sent you the email where they said if we release it, it's a felony. You know, I went really like it.
I've got a question. This is JJ Dixon. Have we heard from any of the vendors that this was the reason why they don't want any of the bidders that this was the reason why they don't want it released because of trade secrets or
yeah.
Is it just
Yeah. It's not OGC.
They had to assert that. Right?
Okay.
Yeah,
so
it's not
OGC. It gives them a first look and it asks them to designate what they want, what they assert is trade secret. In my understanding, although Ms. Pollack can clarify if she's involved in that at all, is that now OGC is working with the bidders to try to resolve those claims of exemption. And it's a tough balance because, you know, OGC has to give JEA advice to try to avoid legal risk while
mm-hmm.
also mitigating the risk that the city gets sued from a public records request and has to pay
mm-hmm.
out attorney's fees to, for example, a reporter who requests those documents. And so I think it's a busy time in OGC right now.
Yeah, but at some point you have to give deadlines to the bidders. Like, here's your bid. You've got 1 week to circle the parts that you think are confidential or trade secrets. And we're releasing the rest of it the next day with the blacked out sections. I mean, it's now been almost a month since the ITN was pulled and we don't have all of the revised bids out there. And we don't have all the information. We don't have the amounts. It's still in dispute. And so I think what I'm gonna urge are time limits, you know, like assert it or not. You know, and then what happens if they say, I'm sorry, this is confidential, and OGC says, I don't think it is, and they say, yes, it is, it's very confidential, we don't want it released, then where does that go? Where does that go legally? And OGC is discussing their options now for that. It's not that they don't agree with my assertions on what's a public record. It's just that they have other clients and they're protecting the city and they have to make sure that they're moving forward and they have spreadsheets of all the public records requests that they've got on all of this stuff. It is a huge project, you know, so they're being careful. But I don't, you know, when I hear release it and it might be a felony, thinking the amount of the bid, you know, that to me is not where we should be at 1 month after the ITN has been pulled. So I'll keep working on that. I expect things to start breaking loose soon.
Mrs. Love, back to the idea you have about releasing the Excel spreadsheet that you've done that includes the blackout.
Mm-hmm.
Have you talked with the OGC folks about that?
Not today, but I will tomorrow. And I really,
what
I mean,
I'm getting at is, I mean, I understand the cat out of the bag concept that OGC is dealing with. And I would just say, in an abundance of caution and to respect their obligations, I would give that another ask to make sure they understand what you're doing and they're not going to say something after the fact about, oh no, you can't do that for some reason. I would prefer to have something affirmative from OGC as we go along. I think we've done a good job cooperating inter-service-wise. Mm-hmm. And I agree that I would be impatient. I think we all are as a public. But that would be my suggestion, that you continue to be gracious about that.
I don't know if gracious is the right word, but I've been there every day. I've been friendly, and I know exactly the path. I could be blindfolded and find my way to the office of the person that's doing it. So I will continue. I mean, we kind of like took some time off for, preparation for today's meeting, and then tomorrow, I find my way back again, and I'll be gracious.
Thank you.
Yes.
Any other comments? All right. That is the end of new business. I need to return to reports for 1 second because I forgot to ask the Complaints Committee for a report.
Our feelings aren't hurt, but we're happy to be invited to give a report. We were busy today. We had a meeting earlier today, and I can share with you that during the meeting we dismissed 3 complaints. One was a holdover from 2015, and I don't know if you want any details about that or just to know that it's been handled now. And then 2 were from 2020. And then we
were these things that came back from another agency? Was that the
that
delay?
That would be correct.
So it was like an OIG referral that finally came back from the OIG?
Yes, exactly. You got it. 4, we referred to the OIG, and there are 7 that we are currently in the process of investigating.
All right, the only other business is scheduling Ethics Commission meetings. Do you need to meet in the public, or do you think the place is anything to do?
Mm-hmm.
Don't meet if you don't need to.
We definitely have another meeting scheduled already, and we'll meet in shade. I think you've made some interesting points today about further work that we can do, looking at possible changes to the ethics code and reviewing the complaint procedures, if I'm correct. So if there may be information that we want to discuss after the SHAPE committee that could be a public meeting, I'll kind of explore that with Kirby and see.
So,
how
all right. Yeah, your scheduling is going to be easier because
you
already have an executive session, so you can just notice
we'll
it.
We'll do that there.
At the beginning or end. All right, that'll be easy. Legislative, do you want to kind of schedule that?
We will.
You want to just do that
right
now, or is it easier to, whatever you want to do, you're in the chair.
President's Day. Yeah,
January?
Positive. No, February.
So the 24th, that's Boykin, Schmidt, the honor, and Smith.
No, it's always a holiday.
I'm not available for.
Haircut at 5 p.m., but we met earlier. I could come.
If we could meet at 3:30, you
to try to be done by then and enough time for you to get to your very important airport.
Thank you.
And I may not be able to go.
Okay, so that's going to be 3:30 on Tuesday the 25th.
Sure. Okay.
Maybe not, but we can staff it some other way.
Okay.
I'm good. I brought my calendar.
Awesome. Thank you so much. All right. So that's legislative, internal ops, you want to schedule? Mm-hmm. Or do you want to review and see if you need to set a meeting?
I'd like to review and see.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I defer to you as a chair. You can handle it. And Ms. Stemp, do you want to schedule yours?
Yes. I'm looking at the week of February the 10th. We'll start off with Monday at.
This is Smith, Dixon, and
Kaboot. Mm-hmm. Monday at
4
o'clock.
Can we do
4:30? 4:30 works for me.
4:30 would be better.
Okay. So let's say Monday, February 6th at 4:30.
Jerry, does that work for you?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, February 6th?
Mm-mm, February 10th.
10?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I'll get the 6th. February 10th.
Know.
And then while we're here, let's go ahead and schedule our March commission meeting.
Looks okay for now.
Okay.
Oh, not for me. I'm sorry.
So close.
I'm sorry.
So close. Fridays generally aren't good for me, but.
The 11th. The Wednesday
before. Fridays are hard.
I know, that's why I don't want to deal with
that. There's the other players champion that day.
I see that. No, that's, yeah. That's a great idea. Mm-hmm. All right, let me turn. What about 24th, or you can't do that week at all?
Me?
No. Okay. How about the next week, the 31st? 31st.
Both of those are fine with me. That's not good for me.
Because there's a 30th work for you? Somewhere else.
How about earlier in the month?
Did we look at the week of the night?
Yeah.
Is the 12th?
Wednesday or the.
Yeah, okay.
How's the 12th?
Somehow I don't have a single appointment for meeting on the 12th. The 12th is
supposed to go somewhere that week, but we can tentatively say 12th until my flight tells me out of town. Does the 12th work?
Yes.
Somewhere.
Would they be at 5 p.m.? What time?
It really doesn't matter to me because I work downtown. What is the, who has the latest suggestion, I guess?
JJ.
Five is best for you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
JJ, will that work for you?
Yeah, 4:35 is good.
All right, so 5 o'clock on March 12th. And just because it's getting late and our complaints folks have been going for 2.5 hours now, maybe we'll stop it at that.
Did we say 5:30?
5 o'clock.
5 o'clock.
As much as I like anything scheduled.
5 o'clock.
We can go through the rest of the year if you want. Schedule the holiday party.
Not right now. I like that.
That was a nice party.
It was a nice party. It was a good choice.
Yeah, I questioned the location at first, but it was good. I liked it a lot. All right. Does anybody else have any business to bring up? Okay, so that closes our business, and we'll move on to general public comment. I know it's been a long meeting, so thanks for waiting, whoever wants to speak. Podium's right there, even though it looks kind of difficult to get to. Thank you all for being here, and we're adjourned.
Thank you.